thank you to our sponsors, Digital Magic the Gathering Online Card Specialist, CardHoarder.com, and MTGOTraders.com. And also thank you to our paper magic specialist, GondaPlaid.com, along with Cape Fear Games, a online card store and brick-and-mortar card store. You can find us each week on MTGCast.com, StarCityGames.com, MyMTGO.com, and MTGSalvation.com.
What's the magic, the secret, the golden ratio?
The golden ratio, which is 1.692939297921.
All right. Nerd! Welcome to Monday Night Magic. I am joined by Uber Nerd Jack, who just was able to recite the golden ratio to, what, about 10, 12 decimal places, I just think you rattled off?
Can we just not talk about it or why? I know it. That would probably do a lot for not only my social skills, but this podcast.
This is kind of like Eric with his two-in-the-butt comment. You can't take that one back. Nowhere near as bad as Eric's comment, but it's in the similar realm.
Well, Tom, there is a way I can take it back, and you want to know how that is?
Do I want to know? Does this involve dinner and a movie?
Oh, no. By staying on topic. Because here at Monday Night Magic, what are we a podcast about, Tom?
We are here a podcast, a weekly podcast about Magic the Gathering. This is episode 203 of Monday Night Magic, like you said. Hello and welcome to everybody. We're going to be going through a whole lot of stuff about Rise of the Eldrazi because it was a pre-release weekend. We have the full sets now. We actually got to play with them. And Jack and I are going to talk a bit. My opinions on the set in general really did a 180 after playing the pre-release for what cards I thought were good and bad. And I think this actually happened as I talked to more people, got a lot of emails about this. I was not the only person to come up to the same thoughts.
Well, I unfortunately did not get to attend a pre-release this weekend, but I did get some limited playing at a midnight draft at Hillside Games in Asheville. So even though I was totally dazed and out of my mind, my opinion on the set's changed. It's so much fun and limited. Unbelievable. Like, it's really fun. I like it.
So we'll kind of start off with our thoughts. Rise of the Eldrazi officially, I shouldn't say officially, but we had our first pre-releases, so we got to play with the cards. We have them now in our possession. I went with Steve to a local card store. I actually wanted to say their name. I believe it was Land World Gaming. They are in Maplewood. I wanted to say their name because I thought they did a really good job. It was a really laid-back atmosphere, and they just had a nice shop. Like, the tables were clean. They were nice. They had good chairs. It's in the neighborhood by where I used to work at. I just thought it was a good store, and I actually went up and told them, like, you guys have a nice place. You know, keep this up. I would like to come back here to play more tournaments. And it was also nice. It wasn't a huge pre-release. There was, in the end, I think, like 20-some people playing. So at least it wasn't quite so competitive. You could talk about what cards you got. People didn't think you were trying to see what's in their deck so you could win. And they also know I never stayed for more than, like, two rounds, so nobody feels threatened by me anymore.
you're the soft one guy, man.
So for my pre-release, Steve and I were at different areas for our tables when we opened our packs. I guess the coolest card that I got on my pack is I did get a Gideon, so that was I was able to pay for my pre-release with my Gideon.
There's Tom hitting all the luck sacks again.
Yep. I got a Gelatinous Genesis, which made me very happy. And overall, when I opened my card pool, my white, even though I got Gideon, the rest of it was not very, I didn't get any flyers or anything that really made that too attractive. Blue, which we're going to talk about, I did not play. That was probably a big mistake. Ended up playing black-red because I got two of the different Eldrazis, none of the legendary ones, but I got the 9-9 and the 8-8. I said, hey, I want to try to play these guys. So I played a ramp deck, you know, basically trying to put out a bunch of the spawn tokens. I got a bunch of the black 4-1 that gives you two tokens. So I've tried to get this out. Unfortunately, a lot of people were playing... I would say, what do you want to call it? Eldrazi, kind of big mana ramp to get out your big Ulamog or your Kozla Quiver you got. Unfortunately, if you play one big creature, there are a lot of spells in Rise of the Eldrazi that can easily shut down a card like a big monster Eldrazi, as long as it's not the protection from colored spells guy, really easily, and then you're just sitting there getting pinged to death by 2/2 flyers.
Tom, I don't really agree to that. I mean, it's not like, you know, Oust would see any play in Limited or anything like that. Right. I mean, Oust is a pretty bad card, I hear.
Oust is, I mean, it's one white. It's really good. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Tom, really, when's the last time you would use removal on a large creature, honestly?
Especially one that, you know, just puts it, you know, after they sacked all their tokens and they just kind of hide it in their library. Yeah, Oust.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's not going to happen.
People don't have the card list in front of them. Oust, one white, it's a sorcery uncommon. Put target creature into its owner's library, so you can target your own if you wanted to. Second from the top, its controller gains 3 life. So in some ways, and I was going to bring this up for this podcast, is not only does it take care of big creatures as long as they're not pro-right or pro-colored spells.
It sets them back for a few
sets
turns.
Sets them back for a turn. Just for one, I don't care if they get 3 life. For 1 white mana, that's nuts.
Yeah, that's really crazy.
So at first I wasn't sure if you were serious or not about Owl, so I was...
I was being completely sarcastic.
A little bit of a hernia, I'm just like...
I mean, it's also like, you know, Path to Exile. I mean, that card's terrible.
Yes, it is strange. The other card that initially I actually did think was terrible, but after playing and seeing these in seal pools, that was really good, and it pertains to what I do for work, was Narcolepsy.
How'd that work? Was it like a better sleeping potion?
Pretty much. I thought it was pretty funny that it was more simulating cataplexy, which is when people actually fall down or get weak from their narcolepsy, but we won't get into the specifics of this. But Narcolepsy, it's a blue and a colorless, enchanted creature. During your, I believe it's upkeep step, if it's untapped, you tap it. This card also was amazingly frustrating, but yet really, really good. So there are a lot of fairly big fatties in this set that don't have any sort of protection or shroud, and if you can just lock it down and then keep beating them to death with level up guys, you are going to win pretty much every game.
Which kind of brings me to a question I wanted to ask you in your experiences, Tom, because, I mean, honestly, I was just way crazy out there when we were drafting at midnight. Like, I was ready to go by 10 o'clock, but my best friend suckered me into going to the draft, so my sealed pool was just terrible. What was more defining for you in the limited experience? Was it the Eldrazi necessarily, or level up?
Oh, by far the most defining was level up. I now understand why that it's a sorcery speed. If that was instant speed, it would have been way too... I don't think I ever thought I would say this. It would have been way too strong.
Yeah, see, I was a moron, and I thought that rebound was going to be, like, the big thing in limited. No. Like, level up guys, by far, like, your little 2-2 soldier can turn into a 5-5 finisher.
Yeah, and I would say the decks I oversaw do the best were kind of blue, usually white, then with a splash, either for red or black for a little bit of extra removal. They did exceptionally well. There's the 2-4 Griffin Flyer, the decent white level uppers, the blue level uppers. Even the black had a couple of good ones. Overall, it was just an amazing... The level-up guys were just houses.
Oh, that's because with the level-up guys, at least in my experience, it's like I was saying, you never really run out of finishers. Like, if you dump enough mana into that little soldier, he's going to become something more than, like, just a 2-2 with first strike, or however you want to put that. Level-up, by far, like, people were abusing the crap out of that. And also something else they were abusing at my pre-release, at least, were the Totem Armors.
Yes, those are also quite annoying, especially there's the blue flash one, the eel totem or whatever, eel or whatever it is, where in a lot of ways it's a removal spell that you can also throw out early to get a +1/+1.
Yeah, I think the same rule of thumb that applied during shards applies here, folks. If you start getting the naturalizes passed around the table, so you start picking them up.
Now, was there a specific level guy that really gave you any sorts of headaches or you found surprisingly strong?
Well, like I said, I was exhausted, so I can't remember the exact card, but it was it was the one that cost 4 to level up. It was a white creature, and it gained vigilance and something else. And then the other one that annoyed me was I was unaware that this card even existed after poring over the spoiler before going that night. Apparently, there's a white enchantment that grants all creatures with level up a +2/+2.
Yes, as long as they have, I think they're at least a level up
counter on them.
I will pull it up here.
Like
keep
that.
Going.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that thing was such a headache. Because the opponents I played against, they grabbed that, and then they would grab as many of the small levelers as they could, or like creatures with at least a 1-cost level up. And suddenly, like, even the most insignificant ones started just growing and growing and growing. And then even more annoying was a friend of mine made a deck that won by playing walls and beating people over the head with walls. He drafted a lot of the Wall of Omens, and I think, what was the name of it? All right, so I can't remember it. But he also drafted a card, apparently, that allowed his creatures with Defender to do damage to a player. Like, you would tap it, and it would deal damage equal to...
Vent Sentinel is basically, it would deal X damage to your target player for how many creatures with Defender you control.
You have never seen somebody as demoralized as somebody that was beaten by the wall deck.
Oh, I mean, there's a lot of decent wall. I had one listener sent in a great name where I was trying to come up with a name for, I want to make a white, red, blue wall deck now that Rise of the Eldrazi is out, and he wanted to call it Wall of America, which I thought was...
America. Well, during Time Spiral, there actually used to be a deck called Walls with Balls. That's applicable, too.
Nice. And the enchantment that gives everything +2/+2 that has a level counter is Time of Heroes.
That thing is a pain in the butt.
It's going to take... this always happens when new set comes out. It takes me a time where I know what the card does, but linking that with the name takes me more than a couple of days.
Yeah.
Now, did you see anybody running around with... another one that was a big surprise, not a huge surprise for Limited, was Keening Stone, the Milling Stone, that could basically kill people in about three turns.
No, actually, I think everybody in my draft pool just got all the jank rares. There was somebody that actually main decked Near Death Experience as one of his viable win cons, if that tells you anything. Yeah, for whatever reason, luck just did not smile upon the packs that we pulled that night. But what was especially exciting was sitting around and listening to everybody go, huh, what the crap does that do?
Yes, and it was a lot of keeping track of level up counters where people were forgetting that the level ups would change toughness or power or other things like that.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a much better mechanic in Limited than I thought it was going to be. I feel like I'm eating crow now for what I said a few months back.
Oh, easily. I thought it was going to be exceptionally weak and just very unexciting, but people were just going to town with, and Black had a couple. I saw people, a lot of people are playing Null Champions, which in a lot of ways is a very, very generic level up guy, but still, it comes out early, you're hitting them early, people are usually trying to build up, you're just leveling up. Usually if you get a level up guy to level 2, 3, if you're getting down to its second or third ability, a lot of times you're going to win the game because you've got a major advantage from now just one card.
Precisely. And I mean, I think that's what they were trying to get with level up, is a different form of card advantage for your creatures, at least in Limited. I mean, we still have yet to see what impact these things are going to make in any kind of constructed format, but if nothing else, they've made a very excited closed format. I like it.
Was there any other cards that kind of came up that had you especially excited or you're interested to see?
Inquisition of Kozilek seemed pretty good and Limited, which made me happy because I really like that card. Other than that, not our pre-release, I should say our midnight draft was pretty tame. And there was only 8 of us, so there wasn't this massive card pool floating around. And by the time it was all said and over, we were all exhausted and wanted to go home anyway. So we were like, whatever. I'll draft this. That's good.
And the other just amazing mythic beat stick that I guess he only played once or twice was Limvala, the Keeper of Silence. The 3/4 legendary angel that shuts down activated abilities of creatures your opponent controls.
Yeah, if you get that, you just win.
3/4 flyer already, any sort of flyer in this, evasion's always good in Limited. It seems especially good now that there's these oodles of very few flying creatures in general, tons of 0/1 tokens clogging the ground. That flyer guys. And the removal overall is not exceptional in the set by any means.
No. And, that was something else I noticed was there was very few flyers. I mean, just straight up, I pay the mana, plop this guy on the ground, and it has flying. There were certainly ones you could level up into being flyers or level up into having reach or something like that. But there were the flyers kind of, hurt a lot of people, I noticed.
Yeah, I was trying to look up the McKindy Griffin. That was the one that I found one of the most annoying. Just 3 and a white for a 2/4 flyer. very few removal spells besides guard duty or narcolepsy or corpse hatch could really kill this guy. And if
you're
to block it, you're just sitting there being annoyed by a generic 2/4 flying common griffin just slowly whittling you to death.
So you heard it here first, folks, walls and guys with wings. That's how you win in Limited.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. It really changed my opinion where even though my blue and white were not strong, I think there's probably enough it would have done better than black red.
Oh, yeah.
So it was fun, and I was talking with Steve at the show, and I also talked with Hector on the phone for a little while yesterday, is I would love to go play in the release tournament now. So I feel like I would do much better just for how I put my deck together and just say, wow, level up, flyers, I don't care what else is there. If I have a few things like Guard Duty or Narcolepsy, they can just lock their guy down for a turn. I don't care if they cast basically anybody but the monster Kozilek, is I'm going to win.
I unfortunately probably won't be able to attend the release this week, which saddens me greatly, but I mean, I look really forward to drafting this in the coming months.
This is something where I was telling Steve as well, is overall, I was excited for the set because I thought the Eldrazi were going to be a lot of fun to play. At least in my very brief limited experience, they did not really fulfill that. I found it kind of boring. I was kind of sitting there looking at it most of the game. I finally get it out, and either by that time, you're either going to totally win the game, or you are in the point where you're going to die to their flyers the next turn.
Well, there's a lot of irony in how I said that levelers were going to be very top-heavy in their mana cost for the effectiveness you'd get at them, because in Limited, the Eldrazi ended up being just that. sure, the Crusher of Umalog and the one with Annihilator one, yeah, if you got those, like, those are really good finishers, and I'm glad that Wizards printed common rarity finishers for Limited. But at the same time, no, like, it's you sit there with them in your hand most of the game, and unless you've got some sweet little combat tricks to get them out soon, no, I mean, it was Limited was definitely defined by the smaller guys this time around.
Let's see. Any other thoughts, Jack, for this before we move on to our rest? We actually have a little bit of Magic news. We've got a little bit.
I say let's segue right into the headlines, buddy.
All right. For headlines, we talked about our Rise of the Judge pre-release, which is fun. I am pretty excited for the set overall now. We have this was found on the Starkington Post was a standard infinite mana combo has been discovered. And
ooh,
easily
combo.
Disruptible, but it's there. So we have Training Grounds. It's that one blue base. It's a Hearthstone, but a blue enchantment reduces activated abilities by 2 colorless mana. Can't go below 1 colorless. Combine this with the Kalnai Gem. That's the 4 mana. Comes to play to bounce 2 lands, and you can tap it for 2 mana of any one color. And this combos then with Filigree Sages, which I had to look up. And it's a 3 and a blue. It's a artifact creature, but Elkin Wizard. This is from the set of Shards of Alara. 2/3 has ability of 2 and a blue, : untap target artifact. So if you have Training Grounds on it, now it says blue, untap target artifact. So you pay 1 blue to get 2 blue of your Kalnai Gem, build up a bunch of blue, and then you can build up to a huge, I don't know, Banefire, whatever you want to be casting. It's a 3-card combo, but still, it's there.
It's utter jank that's going to make an FNM circuit very angry pretty soon.
Yes, because it'll work for about 1 or 2 weeks. People will be angry, they'll stop it, but still, it'll do well that 1 week.
Yeah, and then there comes in the Naturalizes again.
Let's see, Rise of Eldrazi, there's going to be a chat with the research development team. It's going to be on Thursday, April 22nd at 3 p.m. PDT, I think that's Pacific time. I thought it was PST, but it says PDT is what the website says. To join in the chat, you can either log in via our IRC, or I'll have a link in the show notes to the actual web client for that chat.
That's Pacific Dimensional time, Tom.
Pacific
you actually have to be in
time,
a different dimensional to catch
yes,
it. Yeah,
pretty much. I mean, 3 p.m., I thought, I know they want to do it when they're at work, but it seems like there's not going to be a whole lot of people that can join. But, yeah, I understand. I don't want to do stuff when I come home with you. We also have, from the official Mothership site, we have the Rise of the Eldrazi FAQ, the visual spoiler, and also the primer videos, which are pretty nice to go through the different abilities. This is something, if we would have time-warped last week, we could have had Conley watch those and saved a lot of heartaches and emails.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? I'm going to stick up for Conley because he asked us to. Folks, sometimes people are wrong. You just have to come and accept it. And here at MTGCast, what do we do best except stick our foot in our mouths most of the time? My tonsils got athlete's foot now. I mean, it's just what we do. And you have to accept that as a part of our show. And I hope that it doesn't make you love us any less, because we're certainly not going to love our listeners any less.
Yeah, and like you said, for sticking for Conley, it also made you realize that this is a complex game where we have a guy who's a Pro Tour player, does exceptionally well in basically every tournament that he decides to take himself to, and still, you have to learn the cards and the rules are complex. So, suck it.
Yeah, just sometimes things happen, folks.
So, but the primer videos are nice as they're very short, usually just 2, 3, 4 minutes. Watch them. It makes sense. You're like, okay, cool. I get the rules.
This is certainly probably going to get more use than the tips and tricks cards that they include in booster packs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody really pays attention to those. Is there a little too big? I understand that they're there. They fill the hole for the tokens, blah, 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 blah. And they're interesting for the art that's usually on the back of them for the next set. But otherwise, I guess they're nice for the day of, but usually we have the fact by the day of the pre-release. And hopefully
people use them for rolling paper sometimes.
That would
you didn't
be
hear that
very
from me
uncomfortable because how you can't really roll them. It kind of crumples.
Tom, don't make me explain that one.
Do you rip it in half or something?
I don't want to talk about it. I don't know anything about it. They just mentioned that they did it.
Soak it in like bong water. What are you talking about?
Moving on. Let's talk about this Black Lotus that's for sale.
Okay, we're gonna jump down the Black Lotus and we're coming back up. So. This was on the Starkington Post, which he does run a good site. But it's a very catching headline. It says, Beta Black Lotus for $89,000? And this was originally spoiled on a different site. This was officially announced on the GatheringMagic.com site and blog. Is that there is currently right now on eBay a Black Lotus that's the buy it now price is $89,000. And before you start laughing and, you know, passing gas, the reason that, and if anybody collects comic books, you'll understand this, This has actually been graded by the BGS. I think it's the Beckett something grading system, I think, is what it stands for, because it came from sports cards.
Gastrol system something.
And it was rated perfect 10. So this is, as far as I know, the only Beta Black Lotus that's been graded by the BGS, which is you actually have to send stuff to them. You pay them money to grade them. The only perfect 10 graded Beta Black Lotus in existence. And if anybody collects comic books or even sports cards, is when people talk about like mint and ear mint cards, there's this big difference in price even versus like a 9 out of 10 to a perfect 10 out of 10. There can be a huge price difference when you're looking at the ultimate edition of whatever that card or comic is where it is in perfect condition. There's a huge premium for that. Is there an $89,000 premium? That is tough to sell me on. If I can get like a first edition of the Amazing Adult Fantasy 15, whichever the first Spider-Man appearance is, if I can get that for less than this, I'm going to go for the first Spider-Man.
Well, that being said, I would like to offer our listeners a business opportunity. If you're not afraid of selling one of your kidneys and going in on this with us as a part of, how would you put this, magic history, I believe?
Yeah.
Is that a nice way to spin that?
It is, because it's like Action Comics, like a Honus Wagner. These are, in some ways, unique things, one ofs, and if you have it, you're the only one that has it.
Yes, we will offer a lifetime advertisement on the podcast. Isn't that right, Tom? You'll be the guy that sold your kidney to help us get the Lotus.
Yeah, if you actually listen, if anybody, so far nobody has purchased this card. If you actually buy this card and are willing to send us a picture of you holding it and your name, we'll gladly tell people, because you will be the pimp daddiest in your deck if you actually play with that thing. I'm assuming you can, because actually when they get graded, they get sealed hermetically like in a little plastic coffin for this. So I guess, I don't know what you do. You proxy it? That's a good question. I mean, it's truly a collectible at that point, because you can't play with it in a deck.
Unless you can get one of those.
All your cards are graded. So
yeah,
you have this monster
there you go.
Deck of those big plastic things.
That's how real men shuffle right there.
Ah, then you play Battle of the Wits deck with that, so you got like 300 of those things.
My deck weighs 300 pounds, and I bench it every day.
That would also be pretty cool. I would also give somebody balls if they took one of those huge oversized cards people get from the vintage championships where they're, you know, like 4 feet wide and 8 feet tall, whatever they are, and have that, and send that to them to see if they'll grade it for you. You have to send it like in a poster box, basically, like, oh, here you go.
What's this in the back of the truck? Oh my goodness.
Oh God, no. So that's my challenge. If you really want to mess with the BGS, send them something really strange. They'll still keep your money, but at least you can make them touch whatever you sent them.
Don't give anybody any ideas, Tom.
Oh, that's all we do on Monday Night Magic. We give people ideas. We open their minds to magic, bad movies, and just horrible life decisions.
Which are our hardest.
And the other big announcement that came out this week, this is MTG Salvation Forums. Under the DCI heading is a new competitive format is coming. I'll read you the entire quote. It's pretty short here. The people at Wizards of the Coast want to support eternal formats at all levels of competitive play. Unfortunately, the format is simply too expensive for something like a Pro Tour and associated qualifier season to be economically viable. The price of key staples would be even higher than they are now if they did this due to increased demand. And because of the reserve list, which you can argue they did this to themselves, they can't simply print more. So a new format is coming. It will be released later this year with high-level events next year and probably a Pro Tour in 2012, assuming the format catches on. Here's how it works. We got three rules. Number one, normal constructed magic rules apply. So it's not like EDH or Plane Chase. I guess they had to explain that. Number two, all cards printed during mass block or later, plus the associated core sets, are legal. Obviously, they're going to have a banned list of things like that. But otherwise, all the sets after Mercadian mass block. So this includes Mercadian mass block, Invasion block, Odyssey, Onslaught, Mirrodin, Kamigawa, Ravnica, yada, yada, yada. Those are the sets that will then be legal in this new format. And three, nothing ever rotates out. And we heard rumblings of this where they were going to basically, quote, make a new cutoff. What they seem in the new cutoff is Mercadian mass block. And the question is this really going to save people money in the long run? Is this just now going to drive up the staple prices of other staples? Do you agree with this? Do you like them trying to support eternal formats at the price of having to change them at their fundamental level by what sets are legal? Or not. I would love to hear from our listeners about this one.
For me, this seems more like a business decision than anything else. Wizards has been actively trying to approach the widest audience possible the last couple of years. Wow, this is going to be like an attack of the really bad combo decks all over again.
And I talked with Hector about this, because he's a huge Legacy fan and player and knows the overall metagame pretty well. And he had some interesting thoughts. I just don't know Legacy, so teach me Obi-Wan. And he's like, and he felt there are a lot of complaints were focused at Force of Will, these other staple cards. And he argues that Force of Will is what actually keeps that format healthy, because it prevents some of these ridiculous combo decks, because people have a quick early answer to that.
I would tend to agree with that. I mean, from my experience, at least in playing with Force, sometimes you just need that counterspell, and you also have to tap out to do things, obviously, so Force of Will keeps things in line when you don't have the capability to, which I guess in theory you would still have the capability if you had the Force of Will, but let's not mince words there. Hector's absolutely right on this one. I mean, this is going to be such a strange and warped format starting out.
And he was right. If you look up some of the staples right now for Legacy, the prices are pretty crazy. The one card that really surprised me is Wasteland. Do you have any idea what the current price for Wastelands is?
$35, because I tried to buy one the other day.
Exactly, yeah, like $30 to $40 for an uncommon. And that is, it's
brutal.
It's demand, but it still, to me, seemed crazy.
Well, until Star City really started supporting the Legacy events lately, I mean, like, the prices weren't really that bad. They were generally around, I think a Mox Diamond, was around $20 before some of the bigger events started. I'm probably totally misquoting here. I'm thinking of somewhere I shopped other than Star City.
Well, Mox Diamond is currently at, I'm looking at Star City Games, it's $50 and sold out.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy how much inflation's gone up.
And the one little caveat that was on this posting is, and this is all kind of unofficially rumorish right now, is that right now from his inside source, is that the cutoff of Mercane Blast is not yet set in stone. So theoretically, I guess that could either move earlier or later. You guess they probably wouldn't go much earlier, because if you went earlier, getting back now into sets like Urza's Saga, which I don't think they really want in there. And before that is Tempest, which has a whole lot of interesting stuff as well.
Dream Halls! Oh.
Yeah, I don't think they want the Urza's block in there. I'm pretty sure Mycadian Mass is a pretty safe bet.
Yeah, because if you go back any farther, I mean, it's going to be like a much more unhealthy version of Legacy. I have a bad feeling about this. I mean, it's great. I'm glad that Wizards is at least trying to explore other opportunities for its player base. But at the same time, I mean, like, I don't know, it seems so strange to go in this direction when people have been screaming for things like Elder Dragon Highlander for years.
Yeah, but you're right, though. The interest in Legacy and the other Eternal formats has grown hugely over just the past
tremendously.
Year.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine from the emails that they get, the few times I've met with Mark Rosewater, hearing about the emails he gets, they must just get oodles of hate mail both ways. They must just try to make a decision for health of the game to say, hey, this is what we're going to do. I have to admire them. They did put their foot down the reserve list. People hate them now, and they're angry at them for it, but at least they made up their minds that, hey, this is the way it is.
Right. I mean, as queer as this appears to me at first, the R&D team and, you know, just Wizards of the Coast, period, they never make a move without researching it and thinking about it very thoroughly before they do it. So, I mean, you know, except for the few missteps over the years, I think this is probably going to be a good decision.
And if anybody, I'll put the link in the show notes. So for looking at which sets came and what the timeline, I was using the Wikipedia page for the Magic sets. And on this big grid, they actually have all of the development code names for every set basically since Alliances when they apparently first had those. I had never looked at the code names for the Urza's Block sets, which were Armadillo, Guacamole, and Chimichanga.
Oh my goodness.
So I thought that was pretty interesting. So that was the other big announcement that has generated a lot of discussion is, well, this could be coming down the pipeline for later this year of a huge change to the Eternal formats. The other thing we had is the Magic artist Darkin, which is two A's. He did a Sarkhan Bowl, has a lot of other cards that you're going to recognize, Bloodghast, tons of cards that you're going to know. He, on his website where he sells prints, he also sells, I haven't looked at them, instructional videos on how to learn how to paint an image. So the one example, it's about 2 hours long. It costs about $10 to $12, depending on what quality you want for the video. He starts you through how to make a painting of a female hunter. He starts with a digital sketch, adds color to a black and white image, and gives you a glimpse into his design process. And it's a real-time video of him making this. It also includes his brushes and the PSD file, so I think you can use it with either something like paint.net or Adobe Photoshop. I thought if you're an aspiring artist or just want to dabble more with making your own card art, that seems pretty cool.
It's also fun just to watch people paint, honestly. Tom, how many comic book conventions have you ever been to?
I have been to, I think, a total about two. We'll go into Extreme. Very brief. I know emails are coming. I hate comics, blah, 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 blah. I am a huge Disney comic collector.
Oh, no, that's awesome. The conventions I've been to, I actually got to see a few of my favorite artists paint. Like, I don't know if you've ever heard of James Jean, who illustrated Fables for a long time. It's really interesting to see how people will start off with, like, this purple blob, and then it becomes a mountain. Or they'll start off with this pale white blob, and it becomes, like, the Corpse Bride or something like that. And I don't know. I mean, this might be worth just checking out for entertainment.
And it's pretty low cost. So you're looking $10 to $12, depending on the video quality, you know, for 2 hours of basically instruction or at least a demonstration. And, I mean, I'm willing to spend that much on a Chipotle's burrito. Seems like I should be willing to spend that on an instructional video on how to paint.
And cultural enrichment.
Yes. So, I mean, there you go. We pay that much to see movies now in a lot of places, unless you're in North Dakota. Then it's $6.
And $6 here, too, luckily.
Oh, is it? Okay, there you go.
Yeah. Okay. I'll tell you what, the poor rural communities, that's where it's at, man.
They're enjoying the movies.
Oh, yeah.
And I know we've been somewhat attacked by our lack of coverage of the Midwest Masters series. So screw that, suck it, we're going to cover one. So we have the Midwest Masters qualifier was in Chicago. We have the top eight deck lists from April 13th. Can you guess what won first place?
I don't know. Is it standard?
This is standard.
Oh, yeah, Jund. Wait, Jund?
It Jund. Is Jund.
Was Vampires, first. And maybe Jund again.
So, but it was still pretty interesting. What else do we got? Second was the... it's one of the combo decks. Open the Vaults deck. Third was a kind of a blue light control deck. And fourth is Jund.
Oh, wow. Well, it finished top four again. Oh, yeah. Surprising.
So there you go. So hey, we do cover it. When it comes to my attention, I will cover it. There's a lot of Magic news outlets now. We get emailed stuff, everybody gets emailed stuff. It's hard to collate that all on a weekly basis. And be like, I don't want to say the same thing over again. So like, did I say this last week? Did I not? I don't know. I get enough emails already.
Well, also sometimes it's hard to differentiate between what other podcasts on the network have already covered and what we need to cover, if that makes any sense.
And before we fully leave our Rise of the Eldrazi talk, I also had two interesting comments from a source that he wanted to remain unnamed about this. One is regarding the card Deathless Angel. I believe this was actually the Starkington Post, I think, preview card. Two and a white, it was four colors, it's an angel flying 5/7, it can give a creature indestructible. Why this is interesting is not the card, it's the art. Because this person argued this was the first picture on a Magic card to depict an overweight and obese angel. And it's true. She's got a big fupa. She's got a big old, you know, donut hanging out. And she's wearing, like, the Princess Leia slave outfit. So there's nothing holding the carnage in.
Hey, there is more to love on both the mana cost, the ability, and the power of that card.
And the second thing that I thought was an even better pickup on the art was the number of wings required to keep this angel's immense fat backside up in the air. She has six wings. This is two more than any other angel that we know of in print. Even compared to like Razia, which is like the queen king of all angels, it has four.
I think Iona has six, doesn't she?
Does Iona have six?
But of course, then Iona is also like 20 feet tall. So maybe I don't know. That's really funny.
So I just had to
Tom. Now I have to look. Darn you,
Iona. All right, let's see what we got. You are correct. Iona has six wings. I was trying to research all the different angels. I forgot about Iona. So Iona has six wings.
Let's look at the. The chubby face, cute waist angel here. Come on.
Yeah, Deathless.
Come on.
I stand corrected. Thank you. Iona also has what looks to be six wings.
All right, Deathless Angel. I have to check this out.
She's tubby.
Wow. Oh, yeah. She's totally got like a pregnant belly going on.
Yeah, like her nickname should be Precious.
Oh, that's wrong. that is quite precious, though. I'll give you that.
And whenever I read the flavor art, it says I should have died that day. In my mind, it always says I should have dieted that day.
I'm speechless. I didn't even notice that till now. And now every time I look at this card, I'm going to see the pregnant belly on the angel.
Yep, exactly. There you go. And the other interesting comment was about Gideon. And he had an interesting theory that Gideon was Wizards of the Coast, or the R&D team's attempt to get us a white morphling.
I believe I heard from the same individual.
Okay, you may have, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, I had to give credit, it's a 5 casting cost, has 3 different abilities, can become indestructible. I was like, hey, I'll give that credit. It sounds, it is white Morphling-esque.
And it's, the person who sent this email, I believe, he has a way of thinking outside the box, and he certainly enlightened me on Gideon a lot. I mean, that's a weird way of looking at it, but I mean, they probably want to complete that cycle in one way or another if that catches.
Yeah, at some point, they need to. I mean,
it's yeah.
Kind of part of the history of magic.
Or just reprint Morphling and I'll be happy. I mean, that's good. Okay.
Well, they can't now. Well, no, wait. I have to review the results.
Or Pepin's Aura.
Okay, yep, we can do it. Last little news bit I was able to find just came out today on the Twitter feed is the Duels of the Planeswalkers deck. That's the Xbox Live Arcade game. They're releasing paper deck versions of these decks. As far as we know, I think these are going to be exact carbon copy, where if you were to unlock every card that's available for those decks in the arcade version, that's what's going to be included in the paper deck box. It's going to be 60-card decks and come with a 15-card booster pack. And a lot of people have brought up some good points already on this, that there are obviously any more cards we have access to is cool. They're afraid that people are going to get really disappointed and frustrated by these, that they're buying it. It says, Duels of the Planeswalker. I'm looking at the deck box that shows Chandra and Garruk and Jace and Nissa, Liliana, but when you actually play the decks in the arcade game, they don't have a Planeswalker in them. So I'm afraid people are going to be like, hey, I'm getting a Planeswalker deck. I get to play a Planeswalker. But you're not going to actually get a Planeswalker card in there.
Well, you will get an alternate art copy of the rack there, which is cool.
Yes, you will.
Yeah.
But I was just afraid that people are going to see these in stores and be like, oh, cool, I can finally get a Chandra or a Jace or whatever it is, and that's not going to be in there. And I think they need to watch out for them releasing products where they inherently almost look like they're misleading advertising.
Kind of like the gravity feeds from a few months back. I don't even see those anywhere now.
Yeah, so, and I think it's cool that they're bringing this paper match. I don't quite understand what role this fills. Maybe it's a direct way to link people from, hey, I never played Magic. I've been playing Duels of the Planeswalkers. I've heard from these players. They're like, hey, I really like this game. I'm getting into paper magic. This might be a really easy step. So I'll take what I've been playing in Duels of the Planeswalkers. Now I can play that against people in real life, the exact same deck, and then move on from there.
It's just a way of advertising for the game, probably.
And I guess another slam versus Duel of the Planeswalkers, positive or negative, whatever you care, is that this comes with a booster pack to show you that, hey, this is a collectible card game where you should be buying more packs and slowly adapting your deck and changing your deck. Whatever.
Comparative to the game.
I'm an angry old man again.
Simmer down, boy, down.
All right. Well, that is what I have for Magic News this week. Jack, did you have anything to add on before we move on to emails, or if you have a favorite pet deck of the moment?
Yes, my favorite pet deck of the moment. I actually do have something like that, because otherwise...
Say polymorph.
Not polymorph. No, I refuse to play that trash deck.
Polymorph.
My favorite deck of the moment is actually, and you should be saying this as well, Runeflare Trap. Oh, that deck is so
at least it's fun, because it does have that gimmicky feel to it.
Yeah, and see, Runeflare Trap actually fits into what I like to call the douchebag principle, which is when you subtly sit back during a game and you allow things to happen, and then you just go off unexpectedly. It's like watching a top-heavy fraction kind of get just rolled over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, sort of like top-heavy what?
Fraction.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What do you think I said? Friction?
Mine eventually went right to the gutter for... Yeah, I'm not going to say it.
That's MTG cast, but it's so much fun because you'll go Time Warp, go into my next turn, draw my win condition, Time Warp, Twin Cast, take 2 extra turns, and you just see this great sigh go through their body. And they just kind of shrug their shoulders and sit down, and they wait for you to finish. And I really live for that feeling, but that might make me just a mean, mean man when it comes to Magic, but I live for that. I like seeing that expression in people.
And are you playing kind of the one I've seen, kind of the Red Blue, Fanta Mythos, Runeflare Trap, yeah. Time Warps, Twin Casts?
Oh, yeah. It's so good, especially when it's unexpected. The problem I'm having now, though, is at the place where I've been playing FNM, I'm getting known as the Runeflare Trap guy. So I've been seeing more and more sideboards geared only towards me. Like, I was playing against a Jund player, and I went Runeflare Trap, Twin Cast. And he looks at me and goes, okay, Ricochet Trap. And I was like, what? Ooh, I actually had nice. I actually had to read Ricochet Trap because I've never seen that card before. And I was like, aha! Well played, my man. Well played. And then he was just winning all over me with Maelstrom Pulse, which that's not fun. But
yeah, I guess I have not ever actually seen that played.
Yeah, that deck is really, really crazy. I definitely recommend checking it out for folks.
Let's see. Next, we actually have our listener emails. We love getting emails. You can email us at pitimp, P-I-T-I-M-P, at mtgcast.com. Or, Jack, where should they email you with their rule?
All right.
Their rule, was it 32? What's the 34?
Dom, we're not mentioning that again
Death
on this podcast.
Angel Rule 34. Check it
out. No. All right. Send all nudes, hate mail, illegal software, et cetera, to jack@mtgcast.com. You can also hit me up anonymously on
Craigslist in a bathroom.
Oh, no. On formspring.com/jack from NC, one word, all lowercase.
You have to send me that so I can put that in the show notes, because you say it and I can never remember it.
Well, Tom, I'll serve your memory right this time and send it to you. Like, unlike the time when I promised you to send you that iPhone app that actually turned out to be a PSP app.
Yeah, so we were gonna mention that, as because we wanted to clarify that, because I got a lot of emails saying, "Hey, Tom didn't put the link in. I want to play it on my iPhone, and I'm sorry."
Yeah, about that. I actually misread the email that MellowCal sent us. It's a app for the PSP, and we will be more than happy to include that in the show notes this time. I apologize for totally misspeaking, but, you know, sometimes those things happen. So,
and we have to say, for emails, this may be a record week for the most emails I've ever received.
Good or bad?
Good. Overall, very. A lot of it was, quite a few of these were related to the rules bungles that we had last time, and we'll correct those. Basically, the rule bungles we had was Totem Armor is not a triggered effect, but a replacement effect. So if you have a creature with multiple Totem Armor auras on them, if it gets destroyed, you only have to choose one of those to eat it. I think we talked about Rebound. I'm trying to remember, what was the other main one that we messed up? I thought the big one was Totem Armor.
Yeah, the big one was definitely Totem Armor. I probably befuddled Rebound massively because I thought the effect actually repeated over and over and over again, and I was wrong entirely. That tends to happen with me there.
But pre-release time is also a time that you usually get a lot of emails. People are like, "Hey, we have these cool cards. You know, check this out, and we'd like to read those." So we'll bust right into it. First is from Damon L. So he said, "I know you love all things Oozes, so you wanted to share his pre-release deck, which is a green-red mana ramp abusing Gelatinous Genesis," which, of course, is one of my favorite cards. So he had a few of the common Eldrazi ramp, but he had a bunch of creatures with Defender. So he had two Overgrown Battlements, a Bent Sentinel, and a couple of the Ogre Sentry, the Arenicolas for the 3-3 Defender. And he also had the Jiraga Tree Speaker, which is a green, it's a 1-1, but then if you level it up for a green and a colorless, it can tap for 2 green mana. So he said he had quite a few turns where he was playing a Gelatinous Ooze for a green, and then X is 5 times 2, so he was getting 5/5/5 oozes, playing a turn 4 Ulamog Crusher, just crazy stuff. So he's basically playing out a land, a Tree Speaker. Next turn he's playing another forest. He could level up his Tree Speaker, tap that for 2 green, and put out an Overgrown Battlement. Next turn he could play an Ogre Sentry. Then another land, he's tapping his Overgrown Battlement for a huge amount of mana, and then putting out a huge Gelatinous Genesis or a huge creature.
Good grief.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty good. He went 3-1, so congratulations, Damon. That sounded like a good deck. Next is from, actually, this is from Max M. He sent this directly to Marcel, so I'm going to read it now. We'll try to revisit this next episode when Marcel is with us. And he wanted to ask, is what did Marcel feel about the presentation of race in Magic? And this actually was up on my radar this weekend as I watched a classic 1967 movie called Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? And this was a Sidney Poitier film along with Katharine Hepburn, Spencer Tracy, a lot of well-known people in there. And it was about a very affluent Californian family that were supposedly very Democratic liberals. Their 23-year-old daughter comes home with her new boyfriend/fiancé, who is a black guy. He's the most perfect guy you can imagine. He was like an internationally known physician and blah, 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 worked everywhere, but he was black. And it was kind of how her parents reacted to him, but since they're going to get married very soon, his parents then came into town for dinner as well. So it was kind of the view of it from two different sides. And this was the view of race relations in the late 60s, which is monumentally different than it is right now. Race relations have a long way to go, but if you compare it to what it was like in then, it's a huge difference. I'll be honest with that one. So the reason that he sent us emails, he noticed that in the Echo Mage artwork that the main character is black, or he said, or dark skin, or whatever term is preferred. After thinking about it, it occurred to me about the vast majority of people in Magic artwork tend to be white. And if, you know, for people that aren't white, you know, whatever race you are, does this bother you? Do you even notice it? Do you feel it's important for the card art to be more racially diverse? Is something you want to bring up on the show and get our thoughts on it?
Well, I guess you could look at it from the perspective of they try to use race metaphorically in having like elves helping humans and goblins working together and stuff like that. I mean, that's a bit of a stretch, but he's absolutely right. I mean, the only other African-American magical character I can think of is Teferi, and that's only because he looks so much like Samuel L. Jackson. But anyways, I'm trying to think of anything before that. There was a, I believe it was Brian, not Brian Seer.
Brian
Mage.
Brian Elemental?
Brian Mage. No. It was, there was a magician, I think it was in Mercadian Block, and he was African-American. And that's the only other card I've seen with two African-American characters on it.
It is Brian Seer. You are correct.
Yeah. All right. And you know, that's a little skewed in a weird sort of way. I like to think, though, that they're approaching it in a more metaphorical way, kind of like other fantasy works do.
Okay. I mean, I thought it was a very interesting question. I wanted to bring it up.
It's a fantastic question, actually.
So, Max, we will kind of revisit this, but excellent email. I wanted to make sure we read that one kind of early on. Next is Greg D. He went 4-0 to his pre-release. And he also said he had a couple of Pro Tour players at his tournament, and there's one even in his pool. And he says, unlike Conley, I actually can beat Gaudenis, Gaudenis, in Limited. He said, apparently this must be some sort of inside joke with Conley. But his question has to do with gunslinging. And this is something, again, we'll bring up when Conley's back with us. We're recording right now when he's actually at work, so he couldn't join us. So he said, at gunslinging, they said that he wonders, do you guys open several pools to find that one that's good? Because he says you have to play people all day. It's not going to be fun to play if you have a really crappy card pool. Just, he wants to know a little bit more about behind the scenes of what happens with gunslinging at limited events, like these big pre-releases. So, Conley, when you're back, I have no idea if you listen to these. I think you actually do sometimes. You can either email or you're going to be back on the show next week anyways, and we'll go over to them. Next, we have a Will Wheaton sighting. Thank you, Ian B., who sends me an email about once a week telling me that he's seen Will Wheaton on the Big Bang Theory. So, April 12th, Will Wheaton was on the Big Bang Theory. So, thank you, Ian, that you keep... This is why I love doing the show, is just to get these people like, Tom likes Will Wheaton. Will Wheaton was on TV.
We like appeal to our nerdy side.
Oh, that's great. So thank you. I do appreciate hearing about Will Wheaton when he's on TV. We have Evan K, who had an interesting experience at his pre-release in San Diego. And basically about this is he was sitting down to play one of his opponents, and he said there was just a horrible smell in the air. He couldn't identify it, and he said it was honestly distracting him from the game. They went to game two. He said that the smell actually got worse, and he just thought this person had some body odor. You know,
that's pretty common.
But he said, and then his theory got trashed. And this is why you make theories, to test them and then change them. Because his opponent had to get up and maybe want to use the bathroom, had to go somewhere real quick, and the smell was still there. So this now crossed off BO, unless it was horribly lingering BO. So he said he's trying to think about all the different possibilities looking around the area. So he said the only thing that left on the table that could explain it was his cards. So he says, my nerve wavered. Was I truly ready to unlock the mystery of this smell? Surreptitiously, I peeked over my shoulder. The guy wasn't there, so he said, it's now or never, do or die. I reached over, I picked up his deck, and smelled it, and bam. He said, as the smell reached my olfactory nodes, it intensified 100-fold. Oh, there's more. Evan K., you are a writer at heart. The pungent fragrance permeated my every membrane. It possessed a power beyond my worst nightmares. I would not smell again, even for $20. That's a reference to Conley eating poop for $20, if you don't know that.
So listen finally, to the last guess.
Yeah, so finally the mystery was solved. The source had been identified. Why his card smell, we don't know. So, Evan, that was a very interesting email. Thank you. Next we have from Ken T. He says, I love the titles of emails. Living the dream. He said he wanted to write about his pre-release experience today. I actually got this like before the pre-release has even started due to the wonders of time zone changes. His meaning the dream is to cast either a 9-9 or an 11-11 Eldrazi. And so this has been a huge soothing balm from the blistering pace of Zendikar Limited. So he also had a lot of just abuse of Jiraga Tree Speaker buffing up the Balagid Beefmaster that we talked about from one of our old podcasts. Emrakul Hatcher being used to play one of the Eldrazi things, lots of things like that. He also had a Transcendent Master Turn 3, Transcendent Master. Turn 6, level 12, Transcendent Master. 9-9, Indestructible Lifelink for the win.
Oh, good grief.
Turn 7, to add salt to the wound of this game, Ulamog Crusher, cast off an Eldrazi Temple.
Oh, come on!
So, yeah, and Ken sending us, he lives in Singapore, so it's fun to hear that Transcendent Master was smashing face all over the globe. Let's see. Next, this was an interesting email from Christopher Morgan, and he sent in, he was checking out the breakdowns of the upcoming NBA playoffs when he opened up the preview of the Orlando-Charlotte game. At first, I didn't pay any mind to the Magic the Gathering cake, because I normally do read a lot of Magic the Gathering information on the computer, but then it hit me, I'm not reading a Magic the Gathering article. This is an article on sports.yahoo.com. So this is actually the official little page about the NBA playoff page for NBA playoff previews, number 2 Magic versus number 7 Bobcats. The image behind the like the Orlando Magic logo is the Deckmaster Magic the Gathering cake. All of this will be in the show notes, but I'm not sure who was putting this together and says, hey, it says Magic. Let's put a cake.
Yeah, it works totally.
I'm like, all right, so yeah, there you go. Copyright infringement right there on the main sports page for Yahoo. Let's see. Next, we have Damon V, who has been a longtime listener and emailer. He just wanted to write in about our discussion about, and I won't beat this to death, but the email that we had kind of back, or not even back and forth, just from TCG Player, is to say that he couldn't remember that we had directly bashed him at any point in the future. You know, he says he actually reads our site. He enjoys it. He thinks the layout's a little wonky, but overall he likes it. And he just said, fruck him. That's what the end of the email said.
Sometimes the best comments are the most direct ones.
And then an email from there's no name. This is a stjoe.edu address. Just wanted to let us know again about how we mixed up on the token armor. We appreciate that. We know it's a replacement effect. But he had the same thought that he thought it was going to be a triggered effect where they'd all be destroyed as well, so he was happy to see that's not the case. So, Conley, you're safe. Let's see. Chad F. from, I believe he's from Hawaii, he was looking at the Mothership site, and he was taking a looking through all the cards, looking at the full images, and he was looking at least at some different flavor text. And he said a couple of his favorite was Deprive was a favorite one that says, that would have brought shame to you as a mage. Tell you what, I'll keep your secret. Narclips, he was another good one that he liked. Fleeting Distraction says to distract an Archmage would take incredible power, but for a simpleton, something sparkly will do. And the arc's pretty good. It shows like a Minotaur like chasing after like a little fireball. And he said, "Did I get to take a look at the new imp?" I said, "Obviously, yes." I was excited, and he didn't know if I liked all imps or just pit imp. And I'm very open. I like all imps.
Anything with bat wings and horns fits.
Bat wings and horns, that does it for me. I would get really, really into it at Halloween. Mike B. sends in a greetings. He also realized that we both have the same birthday. So Mike B., belated birthday because we have the same birthday. He also said that he's one that recommended Shark Attack 3. I'll be watching that very shortly.
Tom,
I can't wait to see this movie.
Were you like one of those kids where they stuck their hand on the burner before they realized it was hot?
A little bit like snorting pixie sticks and stuff just to see how bad it would hurt. And yeah. That sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I can tell.
Not much else to do.
Bored in North Dakota.
Let's see. Next is Ian, who always tells me about Will Wheaton. He sent in a B-movie recommendation that's actually sitting on my TiVo right now. This is Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
What is it with the giant animals in here tonight?
And this is one that has become... This was one of the most watched trailers of the year, mainly because there's a scene where there's a shark like jumping out of the water and I think like eating a helicopter or something.
Yeah.
Just ridiculously dumb.
So it happened.
Yeah, so it was actually people were like, why is this movie the top trailer? It was terrible. They're like, it's the movie with the big shark eating the helicopter. And the premise of this is after a series of mysterious disasters occurring in the Pacific, from the disappearance of a plane, from the destruction to an oil rig, a group of scientists discover that a secret military mission has unearthed a prehistoric shark and a giant octopus. That is a shitty day. When the government learns of the existence of the menacing beasts, the scientist is tasked with formulating a plan to destroy the phenomenal creatures. Stars Lorenzo Lamas. And to say that it stars Lorenzo Lamas, who was... God, what was he... Was it not Renegade? What was
if you can't recall it right off the top of your head, that says something about the all-star cast and also...
But what was his TV show? It wasn't Renegade. He was... Oh! Okay, we're Googling that. Because you know what I'm trying to talk about, Lorenzo Lamas, right? He was at a TV show.
He was that guy in that show where that thing happened with those people.
Yeah. Oh, people are screaming at right now. I'm pulling up Wikipedia, because I know he... God, what is his show? Oh, this is killing me. It really hurts me right now. It is Renegade. Okay. I just couldn't remember if that was the actual name. It is Renegade. He is well known for being in Renegade and being very handsome. So if you, you haven't got your lunch ramas fixed, there you go. Thorne, who was a listener, he also emailed in about the TCG player discussion. He wanted to say that he said overall he didn't think that we had ever bashed him, but he did agree with the thought that we hadn't been doing the equal amount of coverage, which I would have to agree, solely because it's not quite as widespread right now, so it's harder for it to kind of percolate to the top for me to notice it to put it on the show notes. So he did want to share with that, and he hopes that's the end of it, and says, hey. And he also once mentioned that he said, I want to be the Oprah podcast, and he has a dream where I would have a live show, and everybody would say, there'd be like moxes underneath everybody's seat. It says like, you get a mox, you get a mox, you get a mox, everybody gets a mox. I'm Oprah.
Well, going back to what I was saying, if one of our listeners is willing to put up their kidney, this can be a real possibility.
We can do this. Let's see. Actually, Riki Hayashi, who is a judge that does JudgeCast, sent us in three corrections from the last one. We mentioned about Gideon putting Splinter Twin on it, that you can do that, and Tappa to put out a copy, but if you copy Gideon, you get two Planeswalkers with the type Gideon, and then they both go to the graveyard. So yeah, we theorized it could be possible, but it would be dumb to do, is really what that is. Gideon and Elspeth, he says that Elspeth's ultimate plus Gideon's lure is Infinite Fogs. Being indestructible does not mean things don't get dealt damage. Indestructible Gideon would still take damage and lose loyalty counters. This I honestly did not know. A Planeswalker with zero loyalty counters is put into the graveyard as a state-based action, just as an indestructible creature with zero toughness would be. So I thought that was a good correction. That one I did not know. So I wanted to, that was the other good one. We also have Emrakul versus Time Stop. Because unless your opponent is very, very bad, they will time stop in response to when you cast this trigger, nuking your extra turn and your Eldrazi. A simple mistake that probably could be made by overcompensating for the can't be countered ability and mentioning time stop. I forgot I mentioned this. I know how things can be when you're excited in the moment and you say something quickly, which is true. When you're trying to be spontaneous and talk and this, you put both feet directly in your mouth with one hand.
And then you get our podcast.
There you go.
Yeah, that's our production style
I heard it's going down the tubes anyway, so you probably should just stop listening.
No, the past couple of episodes, terrible.
Lee G. from Columbus, Ohio, he wanted to say thank you for letting him know about the games with Garfield, the Richard Garfield. It's a game design podcast, not just about Magic, but it's about designing board games and just gaming in general. And this is from the Three Donkeys Network, or the Three Donkeys Podcast. Been greatly enjoying it, just wanted to say hey. And he also wanted to recommend episode number 6 of theirs is one called Casual Randomness. And so this is the fantastic job of explaining the idea of luck in a game of Magic and the perception of getting mana screwed and the like. So... And he also said we're doing a great job.
Yes.
Stoke the ego.
If you appeal to us with nerdisms or just kissing our butts, we will most definitely mention your email.
Take it both. Well, let's say take it both ways, and that would have sounded horribly, horribly wrong.
Yes, and here at this podcast, we focus on cleanliness.
Anthony M., he also wanted to let us know about the Totem Armor being a replacement, not triggered ability. David S., actually, this was a correction. We talked about the movie Jeepers Creepers. And I think, Jack, actually, I think this is your faux pas. I think
I take all the credit for this one.
So we mentioned that the actor who played the Creeper was a pedophile. That is not correct. It was actually the director, Victor Salva, was a child molester and directed both films in the series. He reportedly molested the youngest male actor in one of his earlier movies, Clown House. And he says if you actually go watch the Clown House, and there's apparently a lot of butt shots of young boys, it gets a lot creepier. He says, I learned all of this off one of those NBC The More You Know public service announcements. So there you go.
Imagine that. Before you go see Jeepers Creepers this weekend, sit down, take a seat, really.
Take a look at Clown House and watch for young boy butt shots.
Let me see here. Do the balloon animals make you feel funny?
Do it again. Now it was just swimsuits.
Let's edit that out.
Next we have, I believe his name is Guy. He emails us, I believe, from South Africa? I can't remember anymore. He just wanted to say he just finished episode 202, and he was very excited for Coral Helm Commander. That's the two blue kind of level up Merfolk Lord. And this one, we've heard multiple stories on people's official Twitter tweets that Coral Helm Commander coming down and just leveling him up, eventually you just win. Because he flies. So for 4 mana, you get a 3-3 flyer, and eventually he can bump up your other merfolk. So he is pretty good. Next, we have Nicholas B. We corrected the rules things. We figure all that. That's what he's letting us know about. But he still says, we're entertaining as always. Keep up the good work. So there you go. Thank you, Nick.
We appreciate the butt kissing.
Wolfgang W. did send in, this is the only one I got of Conley eating a bucket of poop. It was an email.
Thankfully.
It's a $20 bill just sitting next to Conley with a very badly photoshopped bucket of poop next to his mouth.
Yeah, I thought about being a smart aleck earlier in the week and just sending him a bucket with a $20 bill in it, but I don't know. I like Conley. I try to cut him some slack.
I have spoken with Nick Bottom, the Immortal Din, who is going to be meeting Conley in the near future, and we discussed that he should bring a bucket with him. If anybody's on my Facebook, you saw my birthday cake. My birthday, and this was from my mother-in-law, so wife's mom. They know everybody that listens to the show knows my unnatural love of cats. This is well known. So she made it a litter box cake. Apparently she made this, but apparently these have been made before. So she actually made it in a litter box pan, so like the plastic pan, and she took a chocolate cake and a white cake and she crumbled it all together so it looks like cat litter.
Oh,
actually
boy.
Colored it some of it with green dye. So if anybody has cats, the cat litter usually has like odor crystals in it. They're green or blue or something like that. Then she took Tootsie Rolls, heated them up, and like stretched them out, and they look exactly like cat turds. Exactly like cat turds. One was even draped over the side of like the container, and she brought this to the restaurant where we met for dinner.
Oh, Tom, you sound like you have an exciting family.
Yeah, it's funny that they're like, he loves cats.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Yeah, he always has a shit-eating grin anyways. There we go.
Next we have Ting sends an email saying he thought Marcel did a great job as for his first co-hosting appearance. I would have to agree.
Which is precisely what I was interrupted trying to say last week. Marcel did a great job, and I hope he gets back on with us very soon.
Yeah, no, and he said he was going to join us today, but he was just feeling a little under the weather, but he will be back. He did a great job, and I think he fills a good kind of halfway role. He appreciates the casual, the cool cards, but he's definitely more competitive-minded than I am in a lot of ways for Magic. Ting also wanted to say he appreciated us reading the TCG player email. He thought it was just overall a weird situation. Also has a B-movie recommendation. This is Kung Pao. Apparently this is... I think I heard about this coming out.
Oh, I saw this in the theater. Oh, I remember. It costed the director roughly $10,000 to produce, and all he did was superimpose his face on all the relevant roles in the movie and do the dubbing.
Exactly. And what I was about to say is basically they just took the audio from this original movie and then just spliced in some scenes with a white Caucasian actor.
And it's Steve Odekirk, who's also responsible for Ace Ventura.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's reasonably funny, especially if you have ever seen any of the old Kung Fu films that were extremely poorly produced, or if you just like Ace Ventura and you're a glutton for punishment.
Oh, I liked the first Ace Ventura. The second one was a little painful.
You had to smile to just remind you that you were going to cry otherwise, really.
Except the start of the scene where he's in that mechanical rhino and he has to like crawl out the butthole of the mechanical rhino and he's naked because it was so hot. That one was pretty funny. It looks like it's birthing a human being. That was pretty good. Chris A., he just wanted to give us the correction on the Jeepers Creepers pedophile connection. He said, no one liked the card Consume the Meek. It's a very, very good card. This is the rebounding sack card. A couple B-movie recommendations. Repo Man with Emilio Estevez is a phenomenal one. He also recommends Creepshow. I think I actually have a Creepshow comic. And this was, usually they were kind of short stories. So in one movie or comic book, you'd have 3 or 4 short stories. And really done in the old kind of campy 50s style of horror. And he says you have the two horror masters, you have George Romero and Stephen King, and this kind of homage to 50s horror. He says definitely go check that out. It has Ted Danson, Leslie Nielsen, Stephen King, a lot of people in that movie.
Leslie Nielsen, I'm already there.
Yeah, you have to check that out.
That man's not aged a day.
No, like when you see like in the movies in the 70s, you're like, he looks the same.
Like maybe that's the whole connection there, Tom, is he's like an immortal vampire. And that's why it was cast into the movie. It was because it looked natural.
Because at some point, the people are going to get suspicious when it's like 2052, and they're like, wait, he still looks the same.
Just don't call me Shirley.
Don't call me Shirley. Derek M. was calling for their correction on the iPhone application, which is actually for the PSP. Next one. Peter R. was attempting to resurrect a near-dead topic about the reserve. So he was just curious, you know, obviously most of the input and feedback we've heard is largely negative, people angry with this. But he really hasn't heard either from Wizards of the Coast themselves or like a well-known blogger or pro players, no, this is a good idea and why. And he says that even Wizards hasn't really been able to give us a good reason. He wants to hear about this or if people have any positive reasons for this reserve list. So if you are a listener and want to email us, let us know and I'll make sure I share it with everybody on the podcast. And that's, I'm sorry, I have to move on. I can't talk about the reserve list anymore.
Just keep going, Tom. You can do it.
Ma C writes in, he wanted to suggest Robot Holocaust as another movie. Says he watched it on Hulu.com this weekend, and it was better than I thought, even with cheesy blood and airbrush effects. And that is the end of our emails. You guys made it through it.
All 20 of them, or 30 of them, or however many it was. We did a marathon one this week.
Yeah, but I don't say this. It's cool. I love getting emails, and this is why I listen to some video game podcasts, Giant Bomb. I listen to PC Mag Radio, which is the official podcast for their, used to be PC Mag, and now it's a website only. But there's weekends where, I mean, Giant Bomb gets a lot, but PC Mag, they'll go weeks where they don't get any emails. This is
that's
a well-known tech podcast. I'm like, that's crazy. So I really appreciate that we get emails. I love to get them. I apologize lately. I haven't been replying to every one. I've been saving for the show. I'll be getting better at that over the next couple of weeks.
Well, I'm happy with the fact that now I'm actually getting more, like, emails that are relevant to what we're talking about and not necessarily, you suck, 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 this card is terrible, you suck, you suck, you suck, you suck, you suck. I used to get, like, 20 of those a week, and it made me miserable. Like, I didn't even want to look at my email inbox. And now I get stuff from folks like Mellow Cow who just make me happy.
Yeah.
Who type the same exact thing, and then at the very end of it state, Jack, you know, we're joking.
Yeah, especially like when you get, like, that goat email. And I did send a prize to that guy.
Oh, that was so wonderful. Like, that just made me laugh. And I was having a really crappy day that day, so when I opened it up and I just had those 90 pictures, I smiled a little bit. Just a little bit.
Let's see. Last we have our MTG Cast news. Nothing major. The company that I usually buy our WordPress themes from, if people that know MTGCast.com is a WordPress background, that's true for a lot of sites these days. The company that makes the themes I usually like is called Woo Themes. They're going to be releasing a few new ones in the next couple of weeks. So anticipate there could be a change to the appearance over the next month or so to MTG Cast. I've said this before. I've always preferred a white-themed background, usually for websites. I just think they're easier to read, personal preference. And right now, we don't have that. We have black with white text on that. So I'd like to go to more of a white background, but I would like to hear from listeners' preferences on the main page of the website. I would love to hear from you too, Jack, about this. I want to give you two options. And this
All right.
Just to kind of, you know, for everybody that sends in, if you email to kind of keep it down, we kind of have two choices I'm looking at. One is our current style where, you know, each kind of posting for the podcast on the main page, you have the little player link. You know, it's probably about an inch or so tall, a little longer. So you get about 3 to 4 on a page view. The other way to do it is something more like Mandanation, where each kind of posting that they have is much smaller. There's just a short little blurb. And if you want to listen to the podcast, you have to click on the link, and then you go to the show page, and that has the flash player on it. I didn't know if people had preferences for, do they like to see all of them right there, and they can just click on the one they want, or do you like having that flash player right there on the front page?
Well, having the flash player right there on the front page is nice, but something I would like to say about the coloring, sometimes having a white background with black text makes it hard on people's eyes to read, especially like on mine. I mean, I work on computers 6 or 8 hours a day, and at the end of the day, like, my eyes are really overworked, so I would prefer to look at something that's a little bit softer, which is what you get when you have bright text on a darker background. It's easier to read, and the letters are more clear.
All right, because that's something, even on these new themes, they have a few things I like. I think you can still do more of a like a darker background with lighter text, so that would still be an option.
Yeah, right. This was actually came up with by, I believe it was Maddox was my reasoning behind that. If you've ever heard of him, the pirate blogger, I don't even remember the last time he posted anything, but yeah.
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, yes.
Yeah, the best page in the universe. Is that ringing any bell?
Yeah, yeah, it's coming back. First time I was like, huh? But yeah, now I do.
No, not Angelina Jolie's kid, the pirate.
Oh, the pirate, okay.
Okay.
That kid has style, let me tell you that. That kid dresses better than I ever will in my entire life.
He's very sassy, that's for sure. Wait, are we talking about Angelina Jolie's kid or Mr. Maddox?
I'm talking about the little kid, little Angelina Jolie's kid who wears the hats and he just always looks cool.
I was about to say, because Maddox actually kind of looks like a frat boy with a beer belly, so.
Okay, close.
Well, which could apply in either way in 20 years or so. But.
That was the one big thing. The other thing is, Everybody can call me, get mad at me. I'm pushing off the winners for 1 week for the contest of pick an actor, Planeswalker, that they'd play in the movie and why. The reason this is to get a box of World Wake was kind of expensive. It was only like $80 to get a box of Rise of the Eldrazi. So I'll be able to get my box next weekend, so the prizes will be 3 packs of Rise of the Eldrazi. So there were you get at least you get the newest set.
Everybody's hoping to crack that Jace, that's what it is.
Yeah, so then people might be mad about that because they do want the Jace. But at least now I guess you can get a Gideon or something like that.
Yeah.
That's the end of the show. Oh, actually, no, I will say my quick B-movie recommendation. So if you were at the end of the show, Jack, do you have any last thoughts before I give my movie recommendation?
Actually, I am required to do a plug for a friend. So bear with me, folks. This is going to be a very... What?
Butt plug?
No. This is going to be a very quick commercial.
I'll explain butt plug when you're done.
No. I already know.
This is a radio skit. It's not the actual device.
Anyways, going right into my non-orifice plug. A friend of mine runs a shop in our local town, and so I've been asked to do his commercial on the podcast. And so here we go. Hello, you unwashed neckbeards and ladies. Look at me. Now look back to yourself. No, back to me. Now listen to the sound of my voice. Do you want to be this awesome? Do you even dream of being this awesome? Is greatness a game you've yet to play? Then get your butt down to Red Planet Hobbies in Forest City, North Carolina. We're waiting.
We'll shave your neckbeard.
With our bare hands.
Rip it out hair by hair, because you should know better than have a neck beard when you're 22.
Yeah. Well, most of us, anyways.
I guess I learned a little bit after high school. So when I grew my goatee, I had the neck beard. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. That's not cool.
I just try not to pay attention to it. And when I look and I have a nest of baby beards in my face, well, I've learned my lesson.
And on a local radio show, their morning show, they used, obviously most radio shows do skits. One of their skits, they would call up random places, and the only thing the guy would say on the phone was butt plug. They'd be like, hello, this is, you know, the auto store butt plug. What's that? Butt plug. They'd be like, boat plug? Butt plug. What kind of plug, sir? Butt plug. And these people would keep, they would keep trying for a good 2 or 3 minutes to try to understand what this guy was saying, even though he said the exact same thing every time, he just kept saying butt plug.
That's comedy gold at, it's work right there.
It was really good. That's the end of this. Oh, B-movie recommendation. We'll make it quick. If you don't want it, turn it off right now. You can still listen to it because I can't stop you. But this is one that's actually coming out soon. It has not yet been released. It's called The Human Centipede.
Oh, not you too, Tom.
Have you watched the trailer for it?
Yes,
I watched the trailer yesterday. It looks disgusting.
That's what I was going to say. Why do you want to watch a movie where people openly defecate into each other's mouth?
So basic premise of the trailer is...
Butt to butt.
We have these two young women, or I think are kind of backpacking. They're in a car, though, so they're kind of traveling through Germany. Their car breaks down. So, of course, you leave your car immediately and walk through the random German woods. And they find this nice house, and they go in, and apparently a German doctor answers the door who speaks some English. And he's basically, if Clint Howard could be made more creepy, that's this guy. And he's just, like, leering at them. Just kind of leering at them on the couch, and it comes up that he's this crazy surgeon, and he traps them in his basement, and he wants to, quote, make the human centipede. The movie is the first segment, or the first sequence. So they're already hinting there's going to be sequels to this thing, if you haven't got that. Because a centipede should have 100 legs. The one he's making has 6, because it's 3 people. The movie hopefully will explain why he cares. But he wants to make them have one...
Or why we should.
Yeah, have one digestive tract where he has a little stupid diagram where it shows basically he has sewed mouth to butt for 3 people in a row.
You know what? In lieu of this, I'm going to make my own B-movie recommendation this week because that movie is so terrible that nobody on this podcast is going to listen to it. So my recommendation for this week is, and I'm not sure if I've actually mentioned this before, but I'm going to say it now, is Let the Right One In. Now... This is a foreign film, so of course you have to actually, read it to understand it.
Oh, you're killing me.
No, no, Tom, bear with me. This is a really great horror movie involving vampires. Okay. Not like Twilight. No, nowhere near Twilight.
Okay. You're bringing me back a little bit.
Yeah. But what it's about is a young boy lives in an apartment complex all by himself. And his next-door neighbor kind of eludes daytime hours, and he seems to notice a lot of strange things about her. Well, a lot of people start to go missing in the area and get brutally murdered, blood just all over the ground, jugulars ripped out and all that. And what it is his next-door neighbor is having to feed. And then the story just gets deeper from there, and I don't want to give too much away, but it's really, really good and oddly heartwarming. So I really recommend people view this movie. It's a great horror movie, and it's a good movie to watch.
All right, there you go. So you have good. You have two, arguably not good, but two B movie recommendations to check out. And guys, you've made it through this, guys and girls. You've made it through this show. We appreciate it. Send us an email. I am pitip@mtgcast.com. Jack, once more, where should they email you?
All right, folks, send all the hate mail I know you're going to send me this week to jack@mtgcast.com. Because I think Twitter sucks, you can also hit me up at Formspring at formspring.com/Jack from NC. That's all lowercase and one word.
Now, is this forum like F-O-R-U-M or F-O-R-M?
F-O-R-M. Damn my southern accent.
Oh, okay. That's really where good. I get lost. Okay, cool.
Yeah, well, at least I'm not going, y'all can hit me up at this website
here.
Bring cornbread. But, no, well, I will say this, though. Even though Formspring is totally anonymous, I do get to screen every question, so be very careful before you send me anything, because I'm going to see.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, and you might get slammed, or you might not. And you might get to see me cry. E-cry, I should say.
Now, if you'd made a little video of yourself crying, that'd probably be really popular. Thank you, everybody, for listening. It was a marathon, right? Like almost an hour and 20 minutes, which is crazy.
But yeah, and for two of us, yeah. That's awesome.
It was a fun show, Jack. Thank you for joining me. Everybody, have a good
week. It's always a pleasure. Everybody, have a great week. Bye-bye.
Hit the releases. Level up, blue, white, flying, and win.
Level up.
Level up.